Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Monday. We'll be joined by Grant Mona, Brandon Deutsch. Let's start off with Brandon, because I do want to start off with the Lakers game, despite the fact that the Clippers had a big win yesterday. I wanted to start off with the Lakers game because we both agreed if the Lakers have a chance to win this series, they had to win one of the first two games, obviously, in Denver. I really thought it was significant for them to win game one. Going into the game, they had lost eight straight games, swept in the postseason, swept in the season series. Did not think it would be a good look for them to continue that. Well, they played a really good first half. They were up by 12. They led at the half. And then the wheels came off in the third quarter there, Brandon, and lose by double digits. They've now lost nine straight. It's not looking good. Your thoughts on game one of this playoff series?
Yeah, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about this. I mean, I watched the game at a bar, 33 Taps at Silver Lake, with a couple of friends, and it was actually a Knicks design bar. So we got there at like three, and it was packed, by the way, which is crazy for the Knicks game. And we didn't know. And then there were like no Laker fans. It's like, what happened to all the Laker fans? But back to the point, they had the game, Arash. What happened was, is when they were up 12, Denver started going on a run. Darvin Ham doesn't call timeouts. That's the first problem. Where's the timeout? Like, once Jokic goes on a 4-0 run himself, like once they turn the ball over and all that stuff, the timeout should have been called. Now, that's one of the reasons Darvin Ham will get fired. You see the best coaches in basketball. Mike Malone, once the Lakers go on a huge run, calls a timeout almost immediately, once before, right? Because momentum is everything in basketball. It's a game of runs. And at the end of the day, once he didn't call a timeout there, Denver gets within three at halftime because LeBron has that crazy shot. I knew once they needed to stay up by 10 heading into halftime because we know what Denver was going to go game plan at the half. And Jokic basically knew, I can beat you now because I just had a 16-2 run or 14-2, whatever it was, you know, before LeBron James's three. And I have you where I want you. And this is with Jamal Murray in this game, went 9 out of 22 from the floor. It's not like the game plan was fine. Like, Jamal Murray has had way better games against the Lakers. The role players did not play as well as we thought. And if you were to tell me if we just needed to outscore Denver's 112, 113 points, I would say, oh, the Lakers are going to win, right? Because their defense is good. But Vincent and they don't have Vanderbilt, but Vincent and Dinwiddie did not play good defense when they were in the game. They got just really cooked, and that's what they're in for. So he couldn't play them. Rui was getting cooked by Jokic a little bit, and you know that really led to Tourney and Prince playing in the fourth quarter. First of all, 9 out of 10 times, Arash, you know the game of basketball. If you lose the turnover battle, you're going to lose the game. It was 12-4. LeBron's turnovers in the fourth quarter were horrendous. But even before that, the lazy passes by D'Angelo Russell. Yep. And the difference was D'Angelo Russell. If he makes half of those threes, we're having a different conversation today, right? Like, at the end of the day, he made those in the regular season. And we had conversations all year. Can he make them against Denver? Because he was horrible against Denver last year. And we saw the same D'Angelo Russell of last year against Denver. He didn't do anything in big moments when the game got close, and he was relied upon when they were really trying to double Braun and letting D'Lo take those shots and letting Reeves take those shots. Reeves was a little scared. He didn't want to shoot. And D'Angelo missed all those shots, and that led Denver to go on that run and be up 10, and that was the game. That cannot happen in game two. The pick and roll needs to be iced, by the way, instead of just letting them go back. There was someone on Twitter saying with the Jokic-Murray pick and roll. I know this is a lot to digest for the listeners, but the pick and roll, they stay back and they let Jokic get the ball instead of icing the screen, having LeBron, who has two guys there, really survey the floor because his basketball IQ is off the charts. And you force, you know, Jokic can't get that pass then from Jamal Murray. Then you have to dish it out to the wing. And then it's different because then Jokic has to post up and you have a whole different versus easy baskets. At the end of the day, there was so much that just went wrong, and it came down to the Lakers coaching. I think the Lakers were the better team for most of that game. There were certain stretches where coaching really changed the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, if you would have told me some of these stats in terms of Davis, 32 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 blocks, LeBron James, 27 points, 8 assists, 6 rebounds, again, 7 turnovers. That's just crazy. But again, to your guys' point, that number 3 guy really was not defined. D'Angelo Russell, to your point, Brandon, 6 of 20 from the field, 1 of 9 from 3. And Austin Reeves, 13 points, 5 of 9, 2 of 6 from 3. Rui Hachimura, 7 points. Torian Prince, really the only person who scored off the bench for the Lakers with 11 points. I mean, the depth of this team was really something that I think a lot of fans were excited about coming into the season. A lot of their players that we thought would perform just have. And again, Jared Vanderbilt is hurt. Will get Christian Wood back apparently for game 3. But again, Spencer Dinwiddie, non-factor. Gabe Vincent, non-factor. Jackson Hayes, non-factor. I mean, you go down the list. Grant, we all thought if the Lakers have a chance, they have to win one of the first two. So they technically have a chance. But I got to be honest with you, the way that game played out did not give me the confidence that they are going to find a way to figure this thing out. Maybe they win one at home. Maybe it's a gentleman's sweep. But, you know, when you have the kind of game that they did, they're up by 12. They're leading at the half. They got the big two going. So many of the things that they have to have happen, and they lose by 11 points. It just felt like a little bit of last year. In fact, it was worse than last year, because at least last year the Lakers would have had the lead in the fourth quarter and then would have lost. That third quarter, to your point, Brandon, there's a lot of reasons why Darvin Ham is a terrible coach. Like, I don't know what he told them at the half, but it did not work. I mean, that team regressed. But Greg, your thoughts on game one, and really your thoughts going into game two?
Yeah, when you get a good LeBron and AD game, you usually want to take advantage of that. But that's never been the Lakers' issue against the Nuggets. Sometimes Davis, like in the series last year, he was an up and down kind of roller coaster statistical performer last year. But you know, what was our main objective, guys, when we were talking about this last week? It was D'Angelo Russell has to play good. Austin Reeves has to play good. Dinwiddie and Gabe Vincent have to play good. None of them did. And that was, in my opinion, the dagger. And another thing, Rui Hachimura, he got 31 minutes, 7 points. That can't happen either. And I know that, you know, he was taken out of the game. Look, Aaron Gordon's a great defender. The Nuggets are just a really good matchup for the Lakers, but Rui should have more than 7 points. That's just ridiculous. And the fact that he wasn't in down the stretch over Torian Prince, I get Torian Prince had a pretty decent game, 20 minutes, 11 points. He was 4 of 7. That's fine. But Rui Hachimura is the reason why you're in this playoff scenario. This is a guy that is very good in fourth quarters. He works very well with AD and LeBron. You have to have him in for a majority of that fourth quarter. And look, he has to get more shots. 7 points on 4 shots is not what we're accustomed to seeing from Rui Hachimura. Anthony Davis, you got a good Anthony Davis game, 12 of 23, and he was dominant. It just looked like, again, a repeat of last year. It seems like every single time the Lakers play the Nuggets in the fourth quarter at the end of these games, they run out of gas. I mean, there is a play that I think was the dagger of the game where It was a 10-point game with about a minute and a half, maybe a minute 45 left. And LeBron and Anthony Davis missed three point-blank shots at the rim. Yeah. And Anthony Davis, immediately after the Nuggets got the rebound, put his hands on his knees mid-play while Jokic out-hustled LeBron down the floor and got a dunk to essentially seal the game. And that right there is just a telltale sign of this team just not having the steam and the gas down the stretch to combat the I guess execution of Denver. I mean, the execution from Denver, regardless of Jamal Murray's stat line, they know where everyone is and how to get guys the ball in the right spots when it matters. And their execution just baffles me every time I see them play the Lakers, because like you guys both mentioned, for about two and a half, maybe even almost three quarters, it felt like the Lakers were the more spry, the energetic, the more well-executed basketball team. And then you just see why Denver is so lethal, is because they can just go to that Jokic kind of point guard look and have him in the key or in the post and just play off of that. The Lakers have a lot to worry about here, and I don't expect D'Angelo Russell to put up a 6 of 20 again. I think he'll rebound a little bit better, but it is a really big concern when you have D'Angelo Russell play like this for what, 6 to 8 straight games against Denver, including the regular season. That's not something you want to see. I don't know what it is, because he's actually getting good looks. Like, he didn't get a lot of tough looks in game one. It was just a matter of him missing them. I mean, he was 1 for 9 from three, and a lot of those threes, he mentioned this after the game as well, were not contested. Most of them were really good looks. So they have a lot to look through there. I expect Austin Reeves to have more than 9 shots as well. But if the Lakers want to get back in this series and make this a series, they're going to need really good guard play, guys. That's the main key for me.
Brandon, Grant touched on some of the keys that have to happen for them to win game two. I wanted you to touch on that as well, because I got to be honest. Like, I mean, if they go down 0-2 in this series, I mean, it is a pay to complete. Like, I do think the Lakers, and I don't know why I think this, but they'll find a way to win one at home and not get swept. At least I'm hoping that. But what has to happen for them to at least listen, if they win game two, that changes everything. Now they did what we wanted them to do. We know nobody thought, and not even the players probably think, that they're going to win the first two games in Denver. But if they can steal one, steal home court, break that streak, come back, maybe they have a chance. And I'm really just saying this because it's technically true. But really, I got to be honest. I mean, the way that game one played out gave me no confidence that this will be different than a year ago. But if it is different, Brandon, what has to happen?
Look, I mean, I think the moxie and grit of this team is going to be tested. I just knew, I told Grant, now, look, I'm not trying to bash the Lakers because I love the Lakers, and we're trying to be honest and we're trying to be up here and we want them to succeed. This is by no means bashing anybody, but I didn't understand why they were in Los Angeles on Thursday, not preparing for the altitude in Denver. Because the altitude is a real thing in Denver. And last year, what happened in the fourth quarter in Denver in both those games? I know they came back part of the way, but it was too late because they were tired to begin with. And then the second game in Denver, they were gassed by the second half. Now, how am I supposed to watch this team and say, oh, this is going to change? When we've seen Ham as a head coach, when we've seen what he's done, and they're not even there to prepare for the altitude. Of course, they're going to look great in the first half and horrible in the second half because they got tired. They're not used to it. They burned out. Like, that was part of the thing too. Like, and no one wants to talk about that. Like, it's a fact. So I didn't know why they were still in Los Angeles on Thursday. I would have been flying up there Wednesday night, practicing at least 2 days in Denver before the game on Saturday to get used to it. That's what I would have done. I would have put all of them drive to Boulder and go to that facility where they put you in like the high altitude training that the Olympians go to. Yeah. Like, that's what they needed. But I think, Arash, answer your question. The series is over if they lose tonight. Like, it's over. Yeah. It's over if they lose tonight. Like, people can just like focus on next season. Let's talk about Donovan Mitchell, Trae Young, whatever you want to talk about. D'Angelo's gone. I think the first game solidified that. It doesn't matter unless he has like 50 points tonight, like he's gone. Okay. Even if they win one, like at that point, that's what you're rooting for as a Laker fan. What does that come to? What does that come to? We used to be rooting for championships. Now it's a win if we get one game against Denver. Like, come on. Kobe would have never let this team lose 9 straight to Denver. And I love LeBron James, and I'm not trying to bash him by any ways, but Kobe's mentality alone and the culture he instilled in all of his players and his teammates, he would hold everybody accountable. There's no way this team would have beaten Kobe Bryant in his prime nine times in a row. I don't care if Kobe's going 15 for 48 up the field. He would have found a way to win one game against Denver. I promise you that. And that is, and that doesn't really answer your question, Arash. Like, what do they need to do? For me, it's hopeless. They just need to, from the jump, be up 10 and stay up 10 the whole game. Like, and try and fend off that fourth quarter comeback from the Nuggets. If they get down at any point, the game is over. Over, because Jokic will, especially in the Jokic minutes, he will not let them come back in the game if they're up Denver.
Yeah, and listen, and there's no one who thought that they were going to run away with the game when they were up by 12 in the first half. But you're right. I mean, these runs that Denver had in the third quarter, I mean, that was the problem. I mean, this should have been a very good game in the fourth quarter. And while the Lakers did, you know, bring it down a 6 or 7, it didn't matter. I mean, at that point, when you go on a, you know, a 10-0 run or a 9-0 run or like an 8-0 run, I mean, it just changes the complexion of the game. Brandon, while we have you here, and I know Grant and I are going to talk a lot about this in segment two, so I do want to get your thoughts on this first. Speaking of culture and moxie and all that stuff, I mean, what the Clippers showed in game one against the Dallas Mavericks was really amazing. It reminded me a little bit of the game that I was at in Phoenix when no Kawhi, no James Harden, a game that they certainly wanted because they wanted to win the Pacific. They wanted to get the number four seed and then just absolutely ran Phoenix off the court. Yes, they made it somewhat closer, but still, you know, the game was not in doubt. But again, when you're up by, you know, 28 points, you know, darn near 30 in a playoff game, that says a lot. But anyway, we began the day with confirmation of really what we all thought. Kawhi is not going to play in game one. At this point, I doubt he plays in game two just because of how well the team played. Again, one of the comments that the players made was, we bought him some more time. So, Brandon, your thoughts on the Clippers and not only beating the Mavericks, but just really dominating them in game one.
Yeah, I mean, I was there. Grant and I were both there. It was an excellent environment. I mean, the team looked like what the Lakers should have looked the whole game. Dominant from start to finish. Anytime the Mavericks tried to get back in this game, the Clippers, Terrence Mann hit a three, or like, you know, James Harden hit a three. And James Harden looked like he did in game one against Boston for the 76ers last year. He was dominant, trying to change the narrative. I don't think people realize like that's narrative changing is important. Like, these players pay attention to social media. Like Kevin Durant, for example, his legacy is on the line in this series against the Wolves. Like, I don't think people realize like the Suns' legacy is on the line, like everything they gave up. So same thing with the Clippers, James Harden, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, who didn't play. They play more freely without Kawhi. It's a lot of ISO dominant with Kawhi, and he's great at it. Don't get me wrong. They're a better team with Kawhi Leonard. But the defense was just as crisp as I've ever seen a Ty Lue defense. I mean, 30 points in the first half when you're playing a Kyrie Irving, Luka Doncic. I mean, people are saying this is the best scoring tandem ever. And they held the team to 30 points. I mean, Luka couldn't hit the broadside of a barn in the first half. This was excellent defense. And yeah, he started to get going in the second half. And I do expect the Mavericks to at least, yeah, I think they'll win game two, honestly. But I think they'll at least from the start play a little better. No, Graham, it's no disrespect. I just think that, like, if they play... No,
we believe Clippers. Hashtag, we believe Clippers.
If they play the way that they played in the second half, I do think they'll win in game two. But it was extremely impressive. I think for the Clippers to win the series, they needed one at home to start until Kawhi came back, and they got it. So game two, they're going to be playing with no pressure, and that's a testament. Maybe they'll even better with no pressure.
Grant, I mean, this is not something you want a team to get used to because you want your best players to be on the court. But a few thoughts, and I talked to a couple of players about this in Phoenix, was you guys are used to this now. Like, again, it's not something that you want to be used, like, but like at this point in time, if you've been on the Clippers for a few years, you're used to not having a healthy team. This is not a shock. And in fact, like, this is your reality. And because of that, they're not a shock. But also because of that, and we talked about this when they made the trades that they made a year ago, you bring in Russell Westbrook on the off chance that one of the big two is not there. You bring back Russell Westbrook and you make the trade for James Harden because, like, at this point in time, you have to assume one of these guys, and most likely Kawhi, is not going to be available. So now, at least offensively, you got James Harden, you got Paul George, you got Russell Westbrook, you got Norm Powell, you go down the list of guys that they have. They're going to score. To Brandon's point, the defense was incredible. I know you're thrilled about it. Want to get your preview of your thoughts. And again, we have the entire in the next segment. But Grant, they looked amazing in game one.
Yeah, that was something that I did not expect. And I know that the Clippers, you know, there's a lot of talent still on that basketball team, but I did not expect it to be that dominant of a performance. That was flipping the switch. That was something that we did not see since December and January. That was the December and January Clippers.
Yeah.
And they stymied Luka and Kyrie in that first half. Amir Coffey, I got to give a quick shout out before we go to the second segment. Amir Coffey did an admirable job on Luka Doncic in the first half. He was all over him. Terrence Mann, all over him. They made things difficult, even though he did get some points. The Clippers made everything difficult, and that is exactly what you need to do against a Luka Doncic-led team, and I expect them to just ratchet up. There were some things that they didn't even do good at and that they will probably be better at in game two. This is a team and a coach in Ty Lue that loves to tinker, that loves to improve. He already said, hey, we're gonna work on some things tomorrow. And that's today, obviously on Monday. But great win. I know we'll talk more in depth about it in segment two, but man, what a victory. This is the definition of a total team effort, Arash.
Yeah, and you guys felt it because you were at Crypto.com Arena. Clipper fans can never be happy about any lead that they have. So I know for a fact when the Clippers are up by 20-plus points in the fourth quarter, it's like, oh boy.
It was true. Brandon can attest.
It's nervous time. But yeah, okay, so let's leave it there for now. I definitely wanted to give Grant a full segment coming up to really break down the way that the Clippers look. Listen, they look like they could be the real thing. And certainly, by the way, it looks like Kawhi could be back in this series. All right, so we'll leave it there for now. And we'll talk more about the Clippers when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 from the California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Still clown with the underground
when we come around. Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio, Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. By the way, if you guys have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline, 310-400-0340. All right, let's welcome back in Grant Mona from the Sporting Tribune. Grant, I was thinking about you the entire game yesterday. So listen, we get the news, and it wasn't a shock at this point. It was trending in that direction. You have been following the team long enough to kind of know, okay, this is what Lawrence Frank is saying. This is what Ty Lue is saying. This is what Paul George is saying. I mean, it's more likely than not Kawhi will not play in game one. To that point, played for 3 weeks, had not had any contact drills. I think that's significant. I mean, really don't want him taking his first contact in a playoff game. So we'll see how he does going into game two. But again, there's going to be a longer gap between games two and three. Beyond that, as some of the players said post game, you know, in terms of, you know, they believe that they bought him some time, you know, like when you blow out, your opponent in game one, there's no reason to rush Kawhi back. But again, there's going to be, these first round series and really the playoffs in general, like there's a lot of time in between games. So if Kawhi comes back, it does feel, when you hear Ty Lue, that it is trending at least in that direction. And one of the more significant things in the Kawhi saga was the fact that he was named to Team USA. I think that there was a reason that they named 11 players before the 12th, and they finally named that 12th was Kawhi, because I think that, you know, not for public consumption, but they wanted some clarity in terms of what was happening with Kawhi. Like, is this 2021? Is this 2022? Or is this like he's out for a couple more weeks and he'll be good to go for the mm-hmm. summer? And I think that they got the clarification that they needed. So he is a part of Team USA, and I really truly hope that he is healthy for that. Okay, so Grant, we start the day knowing that Kawhi is not going to play in game one, and it's a kind of a woe is me feeling. But as I watched the first half play out, and we were texting when I was in Phoenix and saying, this is a different team, and in a weird way, this is not a shock. Like, in 2021, by the way, still to this day, kudos to them, because when we found out that Kawhi was out for the postseason, basically, I think the team knew, they were in the midst of a grueling series with Utah, found a way to win that series, and they almost beat the Suns, and they got to their first ever conference finals. And really, since then, the problem is, Grant, is when they don't have Kawhi and they don't have Paul George. When you go back to 2021, I mean, they went to the Western Conference Finals without Kawhi, but the difference is they got James Harden now. They got Russell Westbrook now. They got a really, and this is one of, if not the deepest team in the league. Your thoughts on how this game played out and why, to be honest, and you've been watching this team long enough, like, I don't think this is like a one game thing. I think that this team is going to find a way to beat the Mavericks here in round one.
Yeah, I think every time that we hear that Kawhi Leonard's out, and this was the consensus around not just, you know, kind of Clipper fans, but the media, is that, oh, without Kawhi Leonard, they have no chance. And let's just go down the list of the roster. You still have James Harden, who put up 39 in a playoff game last year. He put up 40-something in a playoff game last year. Paul George in 2021, the last time we saw him in a playoff situation, he had, I think, 18 or 15 straight games of 20-plus points or more. Historic run in the playoffs. Russell Westbrook in the playoffs last year was like 25 a game, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, really good stats. This is a team that still has plenty to take down the Mavericks without Kawhi. And I know that it's all doom and gloom whenever we say that Kawhi's out just because he's that good in the playoffs, but to your point, this is why you bring in James Harden. This is why you have a healthy Paul George and you have Russell Westbrook. In 2021, the reason the Clippers flamed out is because they didn't have that real spark off the bench. They didn't really have a Russell Westbrook. They didn't have a secondary guy to Paul George like they have now in James Harden. And James Harden had 28 points and was absolutely sensational in that first half. He looked spry. He was getting past guys. The pick and roll with Ivica Zubac was excellent. And I got to give a lot of credit to Ivica Zubac, because he's the kind of guy that is not going to be talked about on national media. He's the guy that's not going to be mentioned when you hear the Clipper name. But Ivica Zubac had over 20 points, 15 rebounds. He was a stalwart defensively in the paint. He was absolutely fantastic. He was bullying Daniel Gafford. He was bullying Derek Lively. That is the kind of Ivica Zubac that Clipper fans know that he can be. And in this series, he may be the X factor, because with all the size and all the athleticism that Dallas has with PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively, Ivica Zubac kind of shut that door. He did not let anything happen in that aspect. Paul George, although he did have 22 points, he was a little bit shaky in the first half, but he had 11 in the fourth quarter, and that's really where you need him. Russell Westbrook injected the crowd with energy. Every time he came onto the court, he looked to the crowd and gave a hands up to say, let's get into this. It's all hands on deck, and Amir Coffey, like I mentioned in the previous segment, a lot of kudos to him, because he stepped up in that role of Kawhi Leonard, and obviously nobody can match Kawhi in terms of his output and his production. But Amir Coffey was fantastic on defense against Luka Doncic. Terrence Mann was great on Kyrie Irving in the first half. In the second half, Luka and Kyrie really did their thing. Kyrie, I think, is the first player in NBA history to have 20 plus points in a third quarter without missing a single shot. That's how good the Mavericks were with those two guys. But the thing with the Clippers, and I think this is their strategy, and Ty Lue has mentioned he has some things up his sleeve, it's to just take everyone else out of it. Let Luka and Kyrie score their points, because they did, Arash. They scored, what, 50-something points combined? And it wasn't enough. They still lost by double digits, because the Clippers really locked in and keyed in to not having PJ Washington beat them, not having Tim Hardaway beat them, not having Daniel Gafford beat them. When you kind of and that's why the Clippers have beat the Mavericks in years past, is because they hey, look, Luca, go ahead, get your 35 plus. You need more than 35 to win in a basketball game. I think that everyone knows that. So let's stop everyone else. And all credit to the coaching staff of the Clippers as well, Arash, because they really had an excellent game plan of getting over screens, really hounding Luka and Kyrie to the point where it made it really difficult. A lot of the shots that they made were insanely difficult shots that could have missed, but they're just so incredibly talented that it didn't. So I have now, after seeing what they did in game one, a lot of optimism for this team, even without Kawhi. Yeah. And I know it's not going to be easy. Obviously, this Dallas team is going to look for the revenge in game two. I expect it to be a much different game. But what this tells me is that James Harden is locked in. Paul George is locked in. They have plenty of talent to still compete with this Dallas Mavericks team that a lot of people across media are picking to win in five or six, even I've seen. So for this Clippers team, if they can perform like that, and maybe even three quarters of that, that is an insane performance. If they can perform up to three quarters of that type of performance, they're going to be in the series even without Kawhi Leonard if they need to give him a little bit more time.
Yeah, I mean, and to your point, I think that the people like the Mavericks in the series going into it, but when we got the news that Kawhi would be out and will likely miss game two as well, I think that's when the whole maybe this thing could be over in a four or five. Like, I mean, like, do the Clippers have a chance? And to your point, here's, if you're a Clippers fan, you have to feel good about this. Luka Doncic, the 33 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists. Kyrie Irving, 31 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. Those guys put up numbers that I think you would be very happy with. But to your point, Grant, the other three starters combined for 14 total points. 14 total. The bench, no one had more than 6 points off the bench for the Mavs. It was one of those things, to your point, that what makes Ty Lue such a great coach is that he knows certain guys are going to get theirs. So Luka Doncic went off. He had a game that if you were a Mavericks fan, you would take in game two. Kyrie, historical third quarter, and had a game that you would take in game two. All that being said, they still, like, were getting blown out by 30 and lost by 12.
Yeah, and you know, Arash, the thing that I said on my TikTok, I posted a TikTok earlier this week because it was just on my mind. I'm using TikTok as my sports diary. And what I said was, why are we talking about the Oklahoma City's inexperience and a lot of the guys on that team being so young and really not having any playoff experience except for SGA and Lu Dort? And why are we not talking about the Mavericks, two of their main guys, not having any playoff experience? Daniel Gafford was on the Wizards and PJ Washington was on the Hornets. Both of those teams haven't made the playoffs in quite a while.
Yeah.
So why wasn't the narrative that, hey, let's see what these guys have in the playoffs? Sure, you can cook some of these mid-tier teams in the regular season, which they did. I got to give them credit. Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington were fantastic for the Mavericks down the stretch. But as we all know, the playoffs are a different ballgame. This is a different type of intensity, atmosphere, and kind of game plan. And they both didn't show up. And this was what I kind of wanted to warn Mavericks fans about, is that when you have younger players that have never played together in this type of scenario, these are the performances you're going to get. So while they were great for the Mavericks in the regular season leading up to this, look, the Mavericks are one of the hottest teams in the league coming in. When you get to the playoffs, it's different. Another thing I want to mention, momentum is everything. We've said this about the Rams when they were on the run. We've said this about the Dodgers and now the Clippers. The Mavericks were on a hot stretch, right? One of the hottest teams in the league, had a lot of momentum rolling. They got a week off. And over that week, you know, you sit around a lot. You just go through walkthroughs. You just practice a little bit. Yeah. That halts momentum. That halts a lot of momentum. So now when you play in the playoffs, that intensity is all the way up. You have to get that going again. And it seemed like the Mavericks were a little bit caught off guard by how intense the Clippers were, because a lot of the Clippers players are veterans and they've been there and they've done that. So I'm going to chalk that up to a lot of things. Look, Dante Exum only had 3 points as well. He was a key for them down the stretch. Look down the line, the only guy in double figures besides Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving was PJ Washington. One player in double digits besides those two. So they have a lot of soul searching to do, and the Clippers, they just got to keep their foot on the pedal, because I know that Kyrie and Luka are not going to play like that in the first half again. I just know, just based off of history.
You were there at Crypto.com Arena. Again, it was a different 12:30 Sunday game. It was 12:30 on a Sunday because it was a You know, for it was a nationally televised game on ABC following the Heat Celtics game. It'll get a big number. So again, it wasn't a 12:30 game on a Sunday as Clipper fans and coaches hate because, you know, the Kings have a game that night or something like that. But what was the atmosphere like? Certainly take us there when the Clippers are up by, you know, 28 points in the first half.
Yeah, you know, before the game, because Brandon and myself, we did some interviews with some fans before the game, just kind of gauge how people are feeling. So that'll be up on all socials. But before the game, it was like an hour, maybe 45 minutes, maybe even a half an hour before the game. And we're like, where is everybody? Is this, are we at the right place? Like, where are all the fans outside the arena? But when we got in, Arash, and when we were sitting down and towards game time, especially after the Clippers went on that huge run, that I've been to game six against Utah, where that was the loudest sporting event I have ever been to. I've been to a lot of sporting events. That was the loudest. This was probably second to that. Wow. That's how loud Clipper fans were. The in-game entertainment was very engaging. The fans were locked in. Russell Westbrook did a very good job of keeping the fans engaged and keeping them hyped up. And obviously, when you have that big of a lead, it makes a little bit of a difference. But the Clipper fans, they get this narrative where, oh, where are the Clipper fans? There are no Clipper fans. They sell out a lot of games and they show up for the playoff games. Even without Kawhi Leonard, I was so happy with the turnout that I saw at Crypto.com Arena. The energy was buzzing from the opening tip until the end of the fourth quarter. It was just a locked in type of crowd. And look, they're going to need it. They're going to need all the loud noise. And look, they gave us some of these like clappers, I guess, that you slap against your hand and it makes it way louder. That's another benefit to going to the game. So if anyone out there is looking to go to a playoff game, I highly suggest it because it's such a fun atmosphere. And Clipper fans showed up for game one.
Yeah, I mean, that is what came through watching the game, just how loud it was. And again, they've been a very good home team, and I have no doubt. And wanted to touch on this just because I think we briefly touched on it when the Clippers gave the media a tour of the Intuit Dome, which, again, is ahead of schedule. It'll be open this summer. Again, great for them that their practice facility, their headquarters, it's all like under one roof. So it's not like they got to go to Playa Vista. They got to go to downtown. I love the wall. And one of the reasons that I love the wall was I was afraid. And I say this positively. Some fans take it the wrong way. I think it's great that you could be a Clippers fan and you could afford to go watch your team play, and I really do love that, and it's one of the reasons you know, when I was a kid, I used to go to Clipper games at the LA Sports Arena. I've gone to their games for 25 years at Staples Center, now Crypto.com Arena. When I have friends coming from the UK, I take them the games, and to be honest, like, then they leave as Clipper fans because they'll go there, they'll buy a t-shirt, a hat, or whatnot. The wall is great because when you look at that season tickets, and again, a lot of fans cannot afford season tickets. When you break it down, it's about $30 a game, and you're amongst your peers, your fellow Clipper fans. Still curious how they're going to monitor that, but I trust that with the technology background Steve Ballmer has, that'll do well. Your thoughts on the wall and your thoughts on the Intuit Dome. And I think everyone's very excited as we get to, again, the first few events will be concerts. They'll have Bruno Mars, Billy Joel. You go down the list. But then again, when the Clippers take the court for the first time, I do expect, by the way, Grant, I've not been told this. I mean, they won the Pacific Division this year. Mm-hmm. That is their third Pacific Division title. I know the previous two banners they have hanging at their practice facility. I believe winning the division, if you're the Clippers, is significant. Why? Because that means in the Pacific Division, you're better than the Lakers, you're better than the Warriors, you're better than the Kings, you're the best team in California. They are now in their own home where they can, a lot of teams, the majority of teams, put up division banners. The Los Angeles Kings at Crypto.com Arena hang division banners. Amazingly, by the way, they've won more Stanley Cup titles than division. I think they've only won the division once or twice. But anyway, Greg, your thoughts on the wall? I think it's incredible.
Yeah, I think it's so fun. And for them to make it so affordable, I think it's, shoot, it's probably, what, $1,400, maybe even close to $2,000 for the entire season. And you get to sit as low as row three in the
amazing.
Wall.
That's right.
Right. So that's like really good quality seats. And $30 per game. So I'm loving the direction that they're going in terms of, you know, how they're kind of catering to the fans and kind of the loyal fans. Also, something that, some season ticket holders have told me is that for the Clippers have a section called 207, right? That's a section at crypto.com arena for loyal fans, season ticket holders, and they have a spotlight on them during the whole game because those are the most rowdy fans.
That's cool.
And during the playoffs, so they gave those fans an offer for significantly reduced prices for the entirety of the playoffs so that the games wouldn't be, you know, by resellers or it wouldn't go up in price just because it's the playoffs. The Clippers offered everyone that had season tickets in that section significantly reduced prices, which is so fantastic because those fans were there almost every game. I know a few of them and they love the Clippers and they supported them in that section 207 for a long time. So it was great to see that. But in terms of the Intuit Dome, I am so excited, not just for the opportunity to watch games at their own arena, not just the opportunity to watch them at an affordable price, but just to get away from that Lakers Kings type scenario where it's, you're basically a rental, right? Yeah. And a lot of Clipper fans, you know, we're very excited for the playoffs. But even if there's an early exit, even if they don't live up to expectations, the fact that you're getting a complete rebrand, a complete redesign, a brand new arena, that's so exciting going into a new year. And I'm so happy to see what it looks like fully finished. It looks fantastic already, but, that wall looks great. It's going to be more of a college style, kind of what the Utah Jazz do.
Yes.
The Utah Jazz have kind of a 1-50 section where there's no breaks, there's no suites, nothing. That's kind of what the Intuit Dome is going to have with the wall. And Steve Ballmer, he takes a lot of inspiration from different arenas. San Diego State, I think he took inspiration from, Utah, a lot of college arenas. It's going to be really fun to see. And I know people are worried about if Clipper fans will show up. Clipper fans still show up now.
Yeah.
So they're going to show up to the Intuit Dome. And it looks so intimate. The Intuit Dome looks so like so much smaller and more intimate. So I think the acoustics are going to be really great for that arena.
Yeah. You know, when I talked to Steve, I mean, this was pre-pandemic when I talked to Steve Ballmer about this, but he was really touring the country, not just the NBA arenas, and to your point, he loved Utah in terms of the acoustics, in terms of how the fans are on top of you. But he went to college arenas around the country, San Diego State, when they retired Kawhi's jersey or something along those lines. I mean, he was really cognizant of how on top of the action the fans are. We haven't heard this. I bet you concessions are going to be affordable, a little bit like the Atlanta Falcons. One thing Steve Ballmer did tell me, he's probably not going to make a profit on this arena because generally arenas have multiple tenants. This was built for the Clippers. That's it. Like they will not have the WNBA team there. That there's no you know, that would be great. But like, this is just for the Clippers. You know,
and privately funded too, Rosh.
100% privately funded. So we're both very excited about the Intuit Dome. All right, Grant, we'll have you back on tomorrow because, listen, it's the NBA postseason. So we'll talk about that later. So that's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.